There is a saying in network training that I've heard from a number of instructors. That is, be the packet. The idea is that if you think about networking from the perspective of the packet, hard to understand concepts might make better sense. Now, putting yourself in the position of the packet is easier said than done if you don't really grasp what makes up a packet. Okay. Any of us that have gone through network fundamentals know the OSI model, and any of us that have spent time with Wireshark have a sense of how the OSI model maps to individual packets. Wireshark breaks the packet down into framing headers, IP headers, transport headers, and so on until you get all the way down to the payload. And that sort of a breakdown goes a long way towards being the packet. But have you ever wanted to make your own packet? In other words, actually craft a packet out of your own imagination. I mean, you should be able to do that, right? Something is taking traffic from your web browser and sticking that payload into a packet that can then cross the internet. And those crafty folks who write Nmap certainly make some interesting packets with weird flags and all kinds of oddities that are custom crafted. They throw those packets at networks and then see what happens. So if software developers and network driver writers can make their own packets, can't you? And okay, obviously, you're not a developer. Neither am I. Our coding foo is very weak. Still, there is hope for us in an open source tool called Ostinato. Ostinato calls itself Wireshark in reverse. And with Ostinato, you can make your own packets, custom crafting them any way you like. And today on the Packet Pusher's Priority Queue, we're talking with one of the Ostinato creators, Srivats P. I am Ethan Banks, your co-host today. You can follow me on Twitter at EC Banks and follow the show at packetpushers.net. So first up, Srivats, welcome to the show and please introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience.
Yeah, hi, I'm Srivats. My day job is with Juniper Networks, where I work on the packet forwarding engine, and I'm based out of Bangalore in India. However, today I'm not here representing my employer, but rather in a personal capacity as the creator and maintainer of Ostinato, which is an open source packet generator.
Now, Srivats, your last name, I've only ever seen it in your email and in your writing as just the letter P. Is that actually the entirety of your name, or is it an abbreviation for something longer?
No, it's an abbreviation for something longer. It's kind of difficult to pronounce, so I shorten it up.
Got it. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so before we get into like Austin and what you can do with it, I thought we'd do some background discussion, because to prepare for the show, I went and downloaded it and I read a bunch of the background literature on it. And I just thought, for sake of the audience, we'd kind of go through some of that background information and then get into what you would use Ostinato for and kind of how it works. So in the beginning here, I want to point out that Ostinato is open, or you say that it's open. And so I want to clarify that. Do we mean open as in open source, or do we mean open like some of the new definitions of open that vendors are using to describe their actually closed and commercial products?
No, so it's open as in open.
Okay.
Dictionary
okay.
Definition of open, standard yeah. Open source definition of open. So it's right, all right. Open source. All development happens in open source. All bug fixes happen in open. So everything is open.
Okay. So does it have any sort of particular license tied to it?
Yeah, it's GPL v3.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So it is truly open source software and all of that. No funny business. No redefining it in terms that marketing people might yeah. find interesting. All right. So it's open. Then now let's talk about platforms. If I want to use Ostinato, what platform do I need?
It works on all the popular platforms today, which includes Windows, Linux, BSD, or macOS. And the code, as I said, is pretty much cross-platform. You could, if you want, compile it on other platforms such as Solaris. Not many people using Solaris these days, I guess. Mm-hmm. In fact, I also know of someone who managed to compile it and run it on a Symbian phone. So
okay.
Even that is possible. I don't know what use case he had for it, but it's possible.
But he did it. Okay.
And so, we also have a virtual machine and a live CD distro.
Oh, okay. Really cool. I didn't actually, I did not notice that on the site the other day. I guess I didn't dig around long enough. That's interesting to know. Is it just you working on the code, or do you have a bunch of people that are contributing to the project?
Well, the core team is just me. The community contributes a bit with bug fixes and protocols and other such stuff. Mm-hmm. And there are also some non-development related contributions, such as, and I'll talk about this later, someone did lengthy and detailed post on how to use Ostinato with GNS3,
yeah.
along with a VM he custom built for GNS3. So we'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear about that later. Let's not forget about that. That sounds really cool. Okay, now I went out yesterday because I was getting ready for the show and making my notes and stuff for us to chat, and I downloaded Ostinato on my Mac and used it, and this was from a binary distribution that someone had already pre-compiled for me because I'm lazy and I don't want to do that. Now I noticed that the distribution was July 7th, 2014. I mean, we're recording this. It's April 2015. Should I be worried about that?
Not really. And the answer to your question isn't what you said itself. The person who did the binary distribution for you was me. So as I said, it's pretty much me who does the code, who does the packaging, who does everything.
Okay.
So making releases is kind of a mechanical long process. You make sure it compiles on all the platforms, then you go package it for each, and then put it out, and then upload. And there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen. So I tend not to do it too much. But when there is some major feature that goes in, or there are some major bug fixes that go in, I try and put out a release. But otherwise, if you go and look at the repository, you'll see that, some code changes are happening even beyond July 7, 2014.
Beautiful. Okay. So, in other words, you are still actively working on it. And, I forget how you and I connected. We've talked off and on over a period of years now. I think the first time you and I chatted was over email maybe 3 years ago, because I was looking to create a packet that I could build a gratuitous ARP with and then put that out on the wire to solve a pretty unique little problem I had for a maintenance window. And I ended up using a different product. I think it was a Colasoft product. And then you email me and go, why didn't you use Ostinato? And I'm like, I had never heard of it. I didn't know it was a thing. And so off and on, I know we've pinged each other over the years, and you're still actively working on it. So that's good. That's the thing that I wanted to confirm.
It's been 8 years and running.
8 years and running. Okay. Yeah. So you've really got some miles on it. Why did you pick the name Ostinato? I mean, I love music and listen to music and including classical music. And I know that an ostinato, it kind of refers to an underlying repetitive theme that you might find in a piece. And anyone who's listened to Ravel's Bolero would have an example of ostinato that Bolero cited in the Wikipedia article that describes ostinato. Why did you choose that name for the product? Is there any tie into the musical connection, or did you just like the word? Or
two factors, really. So when I started this project back in 2007, I was learning to play the piano, and I was learning to play Western classical.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big part of my life then and occupied a lot of my mind space.
Mm.
And I had decided that I didn't want a functional name like Packet Builder or Packet Generator. That wasn't cool enough for me.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So with music being on my mind, I wanted a musical term. So I picked ostinato. But there, I did some research before picking the word ostinato. As you rightly said, ostinato, the word, comes from a classical music where it refers to a musical phrase or a sequence of notes that is repeated over and over.
Mm.
For guitar players out there, that's a riff.
Mm-hmm.
So the analogy for what ostinato actually does in the networking world is that it's a sequence of packets that are repeated. For example, you may have an IP packet with an incrementing destination IP address, or you may have a TCP packet followed by a UDP packet, followed by maybe an ICMP. And typically when you're sending these packets, it takes you some while to, you're observing some behavior. You're sending these packets and you're trying to look at, okay, what is happening when I send these packets? So you tend to run it in a loop. So you typically always send these packets out in a loop. That's where ostinato ties up with this.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense the way you phrase that. When I was working with the product yesterday, I could see that you could build a sequence of different packets and then loop them through if you wanted to as a stream. And so that all makes perfect sense to me now. Okay, so ostinato was open, as in truly open. It's open source. It is cross-platform. There are other people that are contributing bug fixes and so on, although you are the creator and the one who's maintaining the code. You're actively working on it. It's got a cool name. All right. We know it's designed to craft packets, create packets, generate some traffic. So give me some use cases here. What can you do with ostinato? What have you seen the user community doing with the product?
So let me start with the use case that I first started with, which was, so basically, see, the way a typical open source project gets started is you need something, it's not there, so you go build it, scratch an itch.
Mm-hmm.
So I, being a networking software developer, needed something to craft packets with, and whatever was available at that time wasn't good enough and wasn't doing what I needed it to do. So I thought, okay, what the heck, I'll go make one. The primary target audience when I started out was the developer community, which works on networking software. And typically all such developers will need to kind of send certain kinds of traffic kind of on a daily basis. Maybe you're doing a feature development or you're trying to reproduce a bug that someone reported and you want to investigate it. So, or you're doing some kind of functional testing of, does this work correctly? Does it work? Does it not? Or you could also be doing some kind of performance testing where you're trying to blast packets at line rate and see how it behaves. That is where I started off with, which also kind of leads to the next category of users who are the QA or the testers of such products, the networking software, and they typically validate features or performance, which they could be doing manually, or they could be doing some automation using scripts, and Ostinato supports Python scripting using Ostinato. So you could write scripts, and then you could just automate, put it as part of your automation framework, and keep running it every time you put out a new release. And in fact, just very recently, I also added a feature where you could configure all these streams that you need using the GUI, which is quite easy and quick to configure. And then you could just save the whole thing as a Python script. So you don't need to keep doing it away and away, and you get an auto-generated Python script out of it. Other category of users that I know about, although I personally have not really worked in much in that area, is security kind of stuff, where you do kind of penetration testing, you craft various kinds of packet, stuff like Nmap does maybe, and see how whatever you're testing behaves.
Well, it seemed like if you could do some automation, it popped into me that you could do maybe some fuzzing with it. You'd have to do some automation to make that go, but it crossed my mind as another thing too. But yeah, pen testing, certainly, yeah.
So in fact, if you Google for something called packets of death, you will come across an interesting investigation where this vendor who has some voice over IP software was experiencing failures. I mean, random failures here and there, and they didn't really know what was causing it. And sometimes even the reboot of the server wouldn't solve the problem. And finally, they figured it out that one particular byte in one particular packet would completely host the Ethernet controller, as in it would die. And Ostinato was featured there as something they used to actually drill down to find this out. And maybe we'll put a link on the show notes. And it's quite an interesting read of how someone debugged this problem from a report of failure to point to one single byte in one packet and then get a new firmware fix from Intel for it.
No, that is crazy. One particular byte in one particular packet could blow this thing up. How would you figure that out? Because it's so... It's what an odd thing to happen. It's not a buffer overflow. It's not six other things that you might go, oh, yeah, I can see how that would go. It's one particular value in one particular byte. Wow. Okay. Packets of death. We'll see if we can get that in the show notes. Exactly.
And the other thing, as I said, was GNS3. So if you're trying to study for some certification and you're using GNS3, as typically almost everyone does, you could use it with that to generate traffic. And we'll put a link in the show notes for instructions on how to integrate Ostinato with GNS3. So in generally, so anywhere where you need to send some packets, so typically us network people get a lot done with ping and trace route, but sometimes those are not enough. So you need something a little more advanced than that, and that's where Ostinato comes in. So if you're familiar with solutions from vendors like Ixia or Spirent, so Ostinato is intended as a open source alternative for those solutions. So, of course, in terms of features and capability, it does not support everything those vendors do. And maybe we'll talk about the limitations later on in the show. So depending on your use case and what you need to do, Ostinato may or may not be sufficient. So you'll really have to go and figure out what you need and whether Ostinato serves your purpose. But it's a good starting point. And one thing that I would definitely want to mention is it's not for the network noob. I mean, if networking is something new to you, you at least need to understand what packets are, headers are, packet fields are, what is a NIC, etc. I don't think anyone who's listening to this podcast would anyway be a networking noob. So probably doesn't apply. But yeah, you need to have some domain knowledge to make use of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some of the engineers that listen to the show are early in their career, and they're kind of figuring things out as they go and picking up everything. We get emails from those folks often. So there's, but I think, you know, generally speaking, most people that are listening to the show are into networking in some at some level, wherever they might be in their career. But
yeah, you don't really need to know much.
Yeah.
You need to know what a packet is, what packet headers are, what protocols are, the OSI model, as you said.
Yeah.
And that should get you to.
Yeah. Well, actually, why don't we just use this as a segue to then talk about using the product, what that's like. You know, I'll talk about my experience from yesterday. It was pretty straightforward. Now, I mean, I kind of knew what to expect. What I did before actually using Ostinato was I went up to the site, ostinato.org, which redirected me to the code.google.com repository. I watched an intro video that I don't know if it was you or someone else. I assume it was you that just did a screen cap and showed in about 3 minutes how to use Ostinato, how to fire it up, what the interface looked like, what the different windows are, and then how to build a traffic stream and then apply that traffic stream to a port and then generate that traffic on the port. It was it was pretty straightforward to get that done. Download it on my Mac, follow the instructions again in the video, and off I went. In Wireshark, I could see the packets that I had crafted, ugly though they were. So why don't we start at the beginning for folks? You know, I knew what I was getting into. I didn't find it too difficult, but maybe you can walk us through the process. And let's start right at the beginning with installation, because I think there's some interesting notes that are worth bringing up about getting it installed and launching it.
Typically, for all the popular distributions, you will get a binary distribution. For example, for stuff like BSD, FreeBSD, you might use the ports collection. So you should be able to normally, you would not need to compile it from source. Although if you do need to do that, there are instructions on the wiki on how to do that.
And what is the source code, by the way? Is it C or Python or...?
It's C++.
Okay.
Plus, there's a bunch of dependencies on other open source libraries. For example, the cross-platform stuff is all Qt, and there's Protobuf, and there's PCAP. So, as we say, you stand on the shoulder of others to build something, right? So
I'd assume C, but if you had said Python and then we're talking about compiling, I was going to get excited and get into that because I've been reading about that and know there's some use cases for compiling a Python with some special interpreters. Anyway, okay, so you'd be compiling with GCC, but you don't even need to do that because you've got binary distributions for,
yeah,
like you said, just about every major platform. Very good.
And one thing that you would need to note is one trick or one important thing to note is to send packets out or to capture packets, you need elevated privileges. Essentially, not everyone can just send packets out of the NIC or receive packets from the NIC. No operating system will allow you to do that. So essentially, if you're just running the application as a user, you'll get into some trouble if you don't take care of that. So actually, even before I go there, let me take a step back and talk a little bit about the architecture of this product.
Sure.
So essentially, Ostinato is actually composed of client and server applications. These are two different applications. I kind of hesitate to use client and server because people sometimes interpret it differently in terms like IPERF does. It's not like an IPERF client and server. So maybe let's call it agent and controller. So the agent or server is actually the application which does the actual packet transmission and receive and capture. And the client or the controller is a GUI to configure and control this agent or server. Or it could be a Python script. So it could be either GUI or Python, which configures this server part. And the applications, I mean, Ostinato is kind of the whole product. But the server product or the agent product is called, the application itself is called Drone. And I'll refer to this later. So you need to remember that this server application is called Drone. So if you're familiar with other vendor solutions like Ixia, Inspire, and Chassis Solutions or Virtual Chassis Solutions, it's just the same. So the Chassis is the server application. And you use the client GUI to configure that. So the advantages of this architecture are that you could run the client and server on different machines. And then one client could connect to and configure and control many of these servers, or many of these drones. Or you could have one server with many ports, and then many clients could be sharing that one server. So for example, a typical use case, what people typically use is you install a Linux server with a bunch of NICs, mm-hmm. You put it in the lab, you wire it up with your devices on which you want to send the packets to, and then you run Drone, which is a server application or the agent application on that Linux server. You just run that application. And then from your laptop, Mac OS, Windows, whatever, you run the GUI Ostinato and then connect to the drone running on the Linux server. And you could have multiple people with their own GUIs sharing the same drone. For example, if the drone server has 10 ports, maybe 5 is being used by one person, 5 is being used by other person. So this separation of architecture into a client and server enables us all these goodies. So coming back to our original discussion about that installation considerations. Mm-hmm. So this elevated privileges is actually only the server application or drone requires it. So the GUI doesn't really need any elevated privileges. So the problem is actually very similar to what Wireshark also has. So the typical way to solve this, or the easy way to solve this, actually for Windows, you don't need to solve it at all, because the libpcap or winpcap library, which for Windows, which gets installed, is installed as a service, Windows service with elevated privileges. So you don't really need to worry about it, because pcap is what Osnoto uses to send and receive packets. But if you're running any of the other platforms, such as Linux or macOS, the quick solution and quick and dirty solution is to run it as sudo. If your distro or platform doesn't support sudo, you can run it as root. But the real actual solution is that you don't want to give elevated privileges to this whole bunch of whole application. So what you can do is you could go and on the drone application, set something called the set UID bit. Change mod U plus S drone that you need to do that gives this application that whenever it runs, it will always run with elevated privileges. Of course, you need to do this as root. Or if you're using Linux, you can even go more fine-grained. You actually don't need all the privileges to do everything that a root admin would do. You just need to be able to send and receive packets. That's the only thing that you want to do. So some Linux distros support something called capabilities. So it's mm-hmm. something that the kernel supports, and distros include a utility called setcap. So you could set the capabilities for network RxTX only for this drone application. It will not get any other privileges to anything else except to send and receive packets. So that's that kind of the best solution that is to solve this privileges problem.
And is all of this documented so that, you know, people want to go up and look for the, you know, the best architecture to most securely, without giving it too many privileges, set this up? You've got this listed out on the site?
Actually, I don't. But that's a good point for okay. me to go and do that.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to catch you out.
So I've told people this over email and mailing list and stuff. But yeah, I probably never went and documented it.
Well, that's a good point for me to go and do that. Yeah, the elevated privileges make sense. And now that you've described the client-server architecture, we've got, you know, the... this has actually been helpful to me, because I saw drone.app listed on my Mac and I didn't know what it was. I assumed it was like an optional way I could do something. I didn't realize that it was being called in the background, and then the GUI was simply just a client that was telling drone what to do. Now, when I first launched the Osnoto app, even though I had already read the instructions that said, hey, you're going to have to do this as sudo and here's the command, I tried just launching it traditionally like I would any other Mac app, just double-clicking on it to see what would happen. What I got was it launched and then reported to me, hey, I don't have any ports that I can see in my port group. There was a port group there, but it didn't actually expand into anything, so it couldn't get at anything. Then I relaunched correctly, as the instructions said, with sudo and the following command to go into the app container and pull out the right object. And there everything was. And then I also saw from the command line, every time I did something in the client, I could see in the text window, the CLI, everything that was actually happening. So it sounds like what I was actually seeing there were instructions coming from the client sent to drone, and then drone reporting for me what was actually going on.
Yeah, that's right. Plus some debugging stuff, because when people problems, I typically ask them to send me that console output to see what is going on. Mm-hmm. So I didn't hide that, because it helps me to debug problems. So yeah, so it's essentially the communication between Osnoto and drone. And typically, if you don't know about this architecture and you just click on drone, you don't actually realize that the Osnoto application actually starts the drone application in the background and connects it, and you don't really realize that.
Now, is there any security mechanism between drone and a client? Or if you know the wherewithal to connect, you know the IP and the port, can you just connect?
Yeah, you can just connect. There's no security right now between Osnoto and drone.
Okay, so since the use cases for this thing are test environments and labs and a lot of these kind of things, that seems reasonable, but it also means that people need to not have Osnoto just hanging out on their production network as something people can connect to and then start sending packets on the network.
Correct. More specifically, they shouldn't have drone hanging out.
Right, drone, right, specifically. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've got architecture. We know a bit about how to install it and some of the concerns that are there. So now I've got it. I'm ready to run. I know how to launch it correctly. So I've got the privileges that are required so that Austin Auto has the access to the kernel that it needs. Now, let's talk about actually using this thing. When you build a packet to be sent by Austin Auto, you've got a concept of a stream, which we mentioned before. Can you explain this in more detail, what a stream is?
Stream is just a sequence of packets. So it could be either one packet or more packets. It could be either the same packet repeated n number of times, or you could have some packet attributes changing in the stream, stuff like your IP or MAC source or desk IP addresses. You could be incrementing them, decrementing them, or just putting out random stuff out there. Or you could be even incrementing, decrementing your packet lengths. So it's just a sequence of packets that you want them to be sent one after the other.
Now, when I'm in the Austin Auto GUI and I start the process of building a stream, I'm actually going to go in and create a packet. And that is pretty straightforward. I can, it just walks you through a tabbed set of windows in the GUI where I can set what the Ethernet frame is going to look like. And you can, there's a bunch of framing attributes out there that you can set. I can set .1Q tagging for VLANs. I can put tags or even nested tags. It looks like Austin Auto supports building a Q and Q structure. I can add IPv4 values, IPv6, and I'm glossing over a lot of other things that are there. I can set TCP, UDP, ICMP, and more. I can do things like populate the toss byte with the DSCP value, let's say. I can mess with the payload to some degree. And then there's, as you mentioned, randomization options and sequencing options. You talked about, Srivats, where you can, you know, change the packet. You know, this time it's going to be this. The next time it's going to increment, you know, and be slightly different as you go down the line. What other novel things can I do there when building a stream?
As you rightly said, you could choose what kind of headers are there in your packet, what kind of packet it is. And the one probably that you used was a set of radio buttons where you said L1 is this, L2 is this, L3 is this, L4 is this. Mm-hmm. But there's also which is what I call the simple mode of configuring protocols. There's also something called an advanced mode of configuring, layering these protocols. And you could just sequence them in any order that you want. So if you're really trying to do some crazy things, you want the VLAN ID to come after your IP header, you could do that. So the normal simple GUI interface will not allow you to do that, but there is somewhere hidden on the below is something called that says advanced. If you click on that, you can just order them in any order that you want. And once you do that and you select all the protocol headers that you're putting it inside the packet, you could go to each one of those and select all the fields, values for all the fields that you want. So when I say all, I mean each and every field that you can go and individually set. Of course, you don't need to go and really set individual values because there are sensible defaults configured for all of them. But if you need to, you can. So in terms of protocols, I think at this point, there are about 25 or 30 common protocols that are included. Apart from the ones that you mentioned, there's also ARP, IGMP, MLD, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And if something is not yet implemented, what alternative do you have? You could configure it as a hex dump. So maybe you could pull it out of a Wireshark capture and just copy-paste the hex dump, and that will play the role. Of course, you really need to know what it is. I mean, if you know about those protocols and you can configure a hex dump, that's a good option. The other option is something called a user script. Now, with hex dump, you're kind of limited to the fixed set of values that you've given. But if you want your protocol, do the randomization or incrementing stuff or decrementing stuff or calculating checksums for your payloads and stuff, you could write something called a user script, which is like a JavaScript, and you could configure a protocol. You can say what is the size of the header, what are the values of the fields in the header, and if there are any fields which are incrementing and stuff like that. The wiki has documentation for that. And if you don't know JavaScript, no need to worry. A copy paste and Googling around can take you much far. Or you can always post on the mailing list for help.
Okay, sure. Is that a pretty active mailing list since you bring it up?
It's not pretty active. I mean, the traffic is low, but it's mostly to the point. So that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, perfect.
So since I am the only guy doing this work, so I kind of try and reply to all emails if no one else has within a day or two. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you'll get a reply. It might take a day or two, but Yeah, you'll get a reply.
Okay, so now I did not try to figure out how to do anything with Python or anything like that to build streams. I was noticing that, okay, if I'm going to use this tool with the GUI, I can get the job done, but it takes a while to build packets. Is there a more efficient way to go about it, like with Python or some other means to create streams?
So what you could do is, if you have a PCAP file, you could just open the PCAP file and all those stuff would get imported. And you could just replay it.
Oh, okay. So I could import a PCAP file, which creates a stream for me. And then if I want to, could I tweak anything in that PCAP file?
Right. So for all the protocols that are supported that we know about, we do something called an intelligent import. So the PCAP file is nothing but it's just a hex dump. It's binary of what the packet content is. Mm-hmm. So, but we do an intelligent import. So we figure out, okay, this is, for example, the IP protocol. So this is the structure of the IP protocol. So the IP source address is this, destination address is this. These are the various fields. So you'll get a very simple, once you import this PCAP file, you'll get a very similar interface as to if you had made a stream from scratch. So you could go fill up each of the fields. I mean, when you open up the stream, the actual values for those fields will get filled up. Will be already filled up for you. You can go and change the value if you want, or you can leave it like that. And for protocols that are not supported, we just take it as a hex dump. And you can go edit the hex dump, but then, of course, you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, AustinOil will still be happy to replay that packet for you. There's just not a GUI overlay. You can't parse it out because whatever the protocol is, you don't have a decoder for it. And so, right, now you're working at the hex level. You can still work with it. You're just working at the byte level, looking at the hex dump and creating values individually. And like you said, and that presumes you know what you're doing, exactly what position you got to be in the field to impact the protocol or do whatever the test is you need to get done.
Exactly. And maybe this is also a good time for me to mention one limitation that you will that Ostinato has, which you might face, is Ostinato is currently stateless, which means there's no stateful stuff for state that is remembered. So, which essentially means there are no TCP handshakes, no TCP connections being established, no ACK and sequence numbers being rightly populated. So, if you open a TCP stream and try to play it out to a DUT, it would probably not work.
Sure, yeah. TCP being, as you said, if AustinOil was not stateless, then like a three-way handshake couldn't complete because, say, AustinOil sent a TCP packet out that's got a SYN set in the header because it wants to start the three-way handshake, the SYN ACK would come back. If AustinOil were to receive it, it has no idea because it's not tracking that.
Yeah, it's not decoding that. Yeah, it's not tracking that. Right.
Right, right. And so then it's not obviously acknowledging particular sequence numbers or, you know, setting sequence numbers in any particularly meaningful way to a remote host. Again, it's not playing that role. It's really just putting specific packets on the wire. It is not the role of an actual IP speaker, if you will.
You're right.
Okay. I want to go back to the randomization options and the sequencing options. Was that like a user request kind of thing? I mean, what in your mind, what was the use case to be able to do, have that functionality built into a stream?
So it's pretty much common in these applications. Typically, for example, you're trying to test load balancing, and you want to test a bunch of IP addresses, destination IP addresses. Does it get load balanced across whatever links you have? So you would want to send packets with different IP addresses. So it's kind of standard par for the course thing for such tools.
Got it. Okay. And that would be the same thing for running several streams back to back. There's many cases where you'd need to be able to do that for testing. So that makes sense. And the same thing for looping, because I know one of the stream options is to loop back at the beginning and send it on its way. I also noticed that you can set bursts of packets versus a kind of a regular stream of packets. Oh, you can set things like an inter-packet gap too. Is that right?
You can't really set it. It gets calculated based on the other parameters that you set. But right now, because I'm using libpcap, which is kind of on a higher level, I really do not have NIC control to do that at that level.
So the screen I'm thinking of, I wasn't able to set it. It was just showing me based on these parameters of what you set.
Yeah, it'll calculate and show it to you, but yeah, it won't actually, you won't be able to set it.
I got it.
So when you're talking about multiple streams, there are, I'd like to mention there's something called the two modes of stream transmission, with one that you probably get used and which is the default is the sequential streams, where you have, if you have three streams, all packets of stream one will be sent, followed by all packets of stream two, and then all packets of stream three. And then if you've configured it to loop back, it'll go loop back and do the same thing. But there's another mode called interleaved streams. So in which instead of sending all packets of one stream, all the streams that are configured and enabled are kind of interleaved amongst each other based on the configured rates. For example, let's say the total throughput that you're sending, combined throughput for all the three streams, is, let's say, 100 Mbps. And you could divide it. Let's say a TCP stream has 50 Mbps, UDP has 40, and ICMP, let's say, has 10. So in all, it makes 100 Mbps. But it does not mean that it will first send 50 Mbps of TCP traffic, then 40 Mbps of UDP, and 10 Mbps of ICMP. They'll all be interleaved together so that, let's say, every 5 seconds or 10 seconds interval, you'll still get both all TCP, UDP, and ICMP together.
Hmm. Okay, so that leads me to another question here, which is how much data could I actually put through Ostinato? Is it CPU dependent?
Yes. The native configuration, what you're running, it depends on your CPU and RAM because everyone's setup is different. It's kind of difficult to claim one particular number. So it's really you'll need to try it out on your setup, how much you can achieve. So typically, processing is kind of PPS intensive rather than PPS dependent rather than packet size dependent. So for larger packet sizes, you'll have a smaller PPS. From a Mbps perspective, you should be able to fill the pipe. But if you're trying to fill the pipe with, let's say, 64-byte packets, and you're trying to fill a 10-gig pipe with 64-byte packets, most probably your laptop will not do that.
If I built a purpose-built server that was, you know, at least quad-core, if not more, is Ostinato multi-threaded that I can take advantage of all those cores? And then, if I've got a bunch of NICs in it and a bunch of testers that are using it, I mean, I could scale this thing up by throwing a bunch of hardware at it?
Not currently. It is not multi-core efficient. I've not yet got to the point to do that.
Okay.
But yes, in the near future.
Okay. But so really, it's more about clock speed than multi-core at this point. And again, if I've got enough horsepower for it and the CPU isn't being asked to do much else other than be the drone server, you can, with the right mix of protocols, do hundreds of megabytes per second of traffic, if not more, all depending on the NIC and hardware combo.
Sure. So so when you're building this purpose-built server, the ISO, live CD or the VM is a good way to go because it contains just that bare minimum that you need, doesn't have anything else installed. So there's nothing else which is contending for CPU or memory.
Cool. Now, I know you've gotten right into the nuts and bolts of the hardware and performance on Ostinato, and I was reading through and saw that you got involved in a DPDK development project that, if I remember right, you won some kind of an award or recognition for. You want to talk about that?
Intel made DPDK, their data plane development kit, open source, I think about 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the community members of the DPDK community is an organization called Sixwind. And so they ran a contest last year for a design contest for applications using DPDK. And it was something on my mind, which I knew, is always possible. But, there was never the right trigger to try something like this. When I saw this contest, I thought, okay, this is the time maybe I can do something about it and I have a hard deadline to meet rather than putting it off. So
I don't know what it is about deadlines that make us get things done, but I'm the same way. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So the one challenge that I had was I do not have access to a server class multi-core CPU with DPDK supported NICs. So I really couldn't test that. But what I did manage to do was you could test DPDK with a VM. It will, of course, not give you the performance benefits. But I intended this to be a prototype to show that it can really be done. And if you have the right hardware, you could go and build something like this. So, I wrote a bunch of code. And impressively, it won the first prize also. The prototype was done, as I said, in a VM. So if you take that code today, and it's not yet integrated in upstream. So if you download a binary distribution or something, you will not get that because I haven't yet integrated it to upstream. And you can just run it and see what you get. But while on this topic, I'll also mention, since I did this, the community has taken this DPDK idea ahead. And there's an organization called, a company called PL Vision. They have taken that code, extended and rewritten the code to do line rate on 1 gig and 10 gig NICs. And they have a bunch of performance reports that they've shared on their blog. We'll put the link in the show notes. So in a nutshell, if you look at those reports, you'll see that you can do 1 gig bidirectional at any packet size. You could do 10 gig unidirectional at any packet size. You could do 10 gig bidirectional for packet size 128 or higher. basically, you can't do 10 gig bidirectional for 64-byte packets.
Hmm.
And they've put the code on GitHub, and we'll include the link in the show notes.
Okay, very cool. Working on, well, infinite scale is an exaggeration, but that's what popped into my head. Getting that closer access to the hardware is always...
That's actually another idea that I have there is, so DPDK is only one such technology which allows you to, you know, get performance, networking performance on commodity hardware. There are alternate solutions like PF Ring and NetMap.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really want to do is I want to keep my focus, since I'm the only person right now doing this development. I do not want to spread myself too thin. So I want to kind of put in a plugin kind of architecture where you could have plugins using DPDK or a plugin using NetMap or plugin using PF Ring, which will get you that performance benefit. And the plugin can be, you know, written and maintained by someone else without it impacting my time and my having to support it.
Fair enough, because you're only one guy. Is there anything else interesting about Ostinato that we haven't talked about at this point?
One thing that I'd probably like to mention is we already talked about the current deployment models that you can use. You could use drone on server and connect it from running Ostinato on a client or using the Python CLI or something. There's some interesting and cool stuff that are potentially possible. And now these, remember, do not exist today, but I believe they are quite cool to do, for example. And if one day when I have time, I'll go try something out. Or maybe one of the listeners today can try it out. So, for example, you could have drone the server running on a Raspberry Pi, and you could get a portable tester
mm-hmm.
that you could carry around. Or you could have a white box switch running something like Cumulus Linux, running drone. You get a 48-port traffic generator. Now, getting line rate from a white box switch, which is like 10 gig, is going to be tricky. Because most of these ASICs are designed for accelerating transit traffic and not host-bound. Right.
So you mean you'd be relying on the control plane CPU in that case to actually generate traffic?
Right.
Yeah.
So, of course, it depends on the ASICs. Maybe there's some hack possible on the ASIC to kind of, you know,
well, plus, depending on the packet you're generating, you're kind of doing some not nice things that could also be weird for the ASIC. I don't even know what they do in that case, but yeah.
No, but typically for most ASICs, I mean, if it's a control packet, they'll have a mode to, you know, pass it without looking at it.
Yeah, okay.
That's another interesting thing. Or, you know, especially for vendors, there's a lot of legacy hardware which lies around. As you EOL older hardware, or you have newer, greater versions of the hardware, you have a lot of older hardware which is lying unused. And you could repurpose that to, you know, run drone, mm-hmm. and you'll get a traffic tester out of it.
Good deal.
Anyway, all of this is just ideas at this point, and all of this will probably require some work.
Yeah, but there's tons of different options there, and the fact that you built it as client-server gives you the freedom to do some of these things, yeah. So if there's people that are interested in this stuff and they want to contribute to Ostinato, how do they get involved?
Yeah, so yeah, contributions are most welcome, and contributions need not just be code. Contributions could be in the form of bug reports or feature suggestions or documentation, or maybe if you could even just, you know, write a blog post or tweet about it, it helps. And or you could help join the mailing list, help others. And if you're really a developer and want to do code contributions, you could contribute protocols. So Wireshark has this concept of dissectors. For each protocol, typically the way the Wireshark community works is the protocol support is contributed as a Wireshark dissector. So Ostinato has something similar called protocol builders. And there's extensive documentation on the wiki on how to add support for a protocol. So you could build that, send it to us to upstream, and we'll go integrate it. And if you have any ideas, just send us a mail on the mailing list. That's the best way to contact us. If you have any ideas, if you have any questions, that's really the best way to go.
And then ostinato.org is the URL for people to stop in, and they can kind of branch off from there to all the other things, correct?
That's right.
Well, hey, this is a good place for us to stop, and thanks to all of you out there for listening to the Priority Queue today. Srivats, where can people follow you on the internet?
So ostinato.org, as you said, is the website, which could be a portal to everything else. The project Twitter handle is @ostinato. And the best way, actually, like for any other open source project, to get in touch with us is the mailing list, which is ostinato@googlegroups.com.
Yep, ostinato@googlegroups.com. And yeah, if you go to groups.google.com and then search for Ostinato, that should come right up. That's where most of my mailing lists seem to be, on Google Groups as well these days. And I am Ethan Banks. You can follow me on Twitter @ecbanks. My networking blog is ethancbanks.com. And of course, this has been The Packet Pushers. You can find the Priority Queue and all of our other networking podcast channels at packetpushers.net. Follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. If you've got something you'd like to share with the Packet Pushers community, you could blog it up as a community blogger. We provide the platform and you can share your thoughts, projects, problem solving, nifty scripts, cool things you do with Ostinato, and pretty much anything else networking related. And share that with thousands of fellow engineers around the world. Just send us an email, packetpushers@gmail.com, and we will get you set up. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.